Unit 4. American Dream.
Part 1. Pre-reading task. Listen to the recording 2 or 3 times, and then think over the following questions. 1. According to Dr. Hertz, what did the American Dream mean to his grandparents? 2. In Dr. Hertz's opinion, who wants people to believe in the American Dream? Why? 3. Why does Dr. Hertz say the American Dream is in one's head and in one's pocket? 4. What do you understand by the American Dream? What you are about to hear is an interview with Dr. Lee Hertz, the director of a scientific laboratory in Stanford University, California. What does the expression, the American Dream, mean to you?
I guess in one way, it's the dream of my grandparents. They turned their backs on poverty in Poland and set out with high hopes for a new life in America.
So the American Dream means getting out of poverty?
Then it did. However, when they got to America, they realized that the dream wasn't going to happen, that the streets were not paved with gold, and they had to struggle to make a living. So the dream became the chance for their children to succeed.
Through
hard work and giving their kids an education. They thought that through education, their children would have the choice of doing what they wanted, that basically life could be what you made it.
And do you believe that?
Well, America does give some people the opportunity to be what they want to be.
Why just some people? Isn't the American Dream an idea everyone can believe in?
Yes, but only because our government wants us to believe it. You could say that the American Dream has been used to support the capitalist system. It keeps most of the population working and spending their money.
How?
Well, all the time TV shows that the dream of a good life can be reached through money. Advertising tells you to buy and buy so that finally you will get there and the dream will come true.
So you're saying it's the dream that makes the system work?
Yes, because people become gripped by the need to move up in the world. They have to reach the top. They are never satisfied with what they have. The American dream is at the end of the rainbow. It's not simply about having enough money to buy the things you need. It's about reaching the level of all the other people who have the money to buy more than you can afford. The American dream may be in your head, but to find it, you have to reach into your pocket.
Part 2. Text A. The American dream means different things to different people. But for many, particularly immigrants, it means the opportunity to make a better life for themselves. For them, the dream is that talent and hard work can take you from log cabin to White House. Tony Trevisano did not rise quite so high, yet he managed to make his own dream come true.
Tony Trevisano's American Dream by Frederick C. Crawford. He came from a rocky farm in Italy, somewhere south of Rome. How or when he got to America, I don't know. But one evening, I found him standing in the driveway, behind my garage. He was about 5'7" or 5'8" and thin. "I mow your lawn," he said. It was hard to comprehend his broken English. I asked him his name. "Tony Trevisano," he replied. "I mow your lawn." I told Tony that I couldn't afford a gardener. "I mow your lawn," he said again, then walked away. I went into my house unhappy. Yes, these depression days were difficult, but how could I turn away a person who had come to me for help? When I got home from work the next evening, the lawn had been mowed, the garden weeded, and the walk swept. I asked my wife what had happened. "A man got the lawnmower out of the garage and worked on the yard," she answered. "I assumed you had hired him." I told her of my experience the night before. We thought it strange that he had not asked for pay. The next 2 days were busy, and I forgot about Tony. We were trying to rebuild our business and bring some of our workers back to the plants. But on Friday, returning home a little early, I saw Tony again, behind the garage. I complimented him on the work he had done. "I mow your lawn," he said. I managed to work out some kind of small weekly pay, and each day Tony cleaned up the yard and took care of any little tasks. My wife said he was very helpful whenever there were any heavy objects to lift or things to fix. Summer passed into fall, and winds blew cold. "Mr. Craw, snow pretty soon," Tony told me one evening. "When winter come, you give me job clearing snow at the factory." Well, what do you do with such determination and hope? Of course, Tony got his job at the factory. The months passed. I asked the personnel department for a report. They said Tony was a very good worker. One day, I found Tony at our meeting place, behind the garage. "I want to be apprentice," he said. We had a pretty good apprentice school that trained laborers, but I doubted whether Tony had the capacity to read blueprints and micrometers or do precision work. Still, how could I turn him down? Tony took a cut in pay to become an apprentice. Months later, I got a report that he had graduated as a skilled grinder. He had learned to read the millionths of an inch on the micrometer and to shape the grinding wheel with an instrument set with a diamond. My wife and I were delighted with what we felt was a satisfying end of the story. A year or two passed, and again I found Tony in his usual waiting place. We talked about his work, and I asked him what he wanted. "Mr. Craw," he said, "I like a buy a house." On the edge of town, he had found a house for sale, a complete wreck. I called on a banker friend. "Do you ever loan money on character?" I asked. "No," he said, "we can't afford to. No sale." "Now wait a minute," I replied. "Here is a hard-working man, a man of character. I can promise you that. He's got a good job. You're not getting a damn thing from your lot. It will stay there for years. At least he will pay your interest." Reluctantly, the banker wrote a mortgage for $2,000 and gave Tony the house with no down payment. Tony was delighted. From then on, it was interesting to see that any discarded odds and ends around our place, a broken screen, a bit of hardware, boards from packing, Tony would gather and take home. After about 2 years, I found Tony in our familiar meeting spot. He seemed to stand a little straighter. He was heavier. He had a look of confidence. "Mr. Craw, I sell my house," he said with pride. "I got $8,000. I was amazed. "But Tony, where are you going to live without a house?" "Mr. Craw, I buy a farm." We sat down and talked. Tony told me that to own a farm was his dream. He loved the tomatoes and peppers and all the other vegetables important to his Italian diet. He had sent for his wife and son and daughter back in Italy. He had hunted around the edge of town until he found a small, abandoned piece of property with a house and shed. Now he was moving his family to his farm. Sometime later, Tony arrived on a Sunday afternoon, neatly dressed. He had another Italian man with him. He told me that he had persuaded his childhood friend to move to America. Tony was sponsoring him. With an amused look in his eye, he told me that when they approached the little farm he now operated, his friend stood in amazement and said, "Tony, you are a millionaire." Then, during the war, a message came from my company. Tony had passed away. I ask our people to check on his family and see that everything was properly handled. They found the farm green with vegetables, the little house livable and homey. There was a tractor and a good car in the yard. The children were educated and working, and Tony didn't owe a cent. After he passed away, I thought more and more about Tony's career. He grew in stature in my mind. In the end, I think, he stood as tall and as proud as the greatest American industrialists. They had all reached their success by the same route and by the same values and principles, vision, determination, self-control, optimism, self-respect, and above all, integrity. Tony did not begin on the bottom rung of the ladder. He began in the basement. Tony's affairs were tiny. The greatest industrialist affairs were giant. But, after all, the balance sheets were exactly the same. The only difference was where you put the decimal point. Tony Trivisano came to America seeking the American dream. But he didn't find it. He created it for himself. All he had were 24 precious hours a day, and he wasted none of them.